from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Major leaguers, and that's not even counting Corbin Carroll.
And that one is ripped out towards right center. Watch him run. And he's thinking three. There he goes. Dives in with a three-bagger. Pete Crow Armstrong with a three-bagger. Watch him run.
There wasn't a doubt in his mind. He didn't need a third base coach to tell him. How good does that have to feel after going for a couple of weeks without a hit?
I would legitimately come to this ballpark and sit here with no one in the stands and just watch him run the bases and have them hit him fly balls. It's that entertaining.
I agree.
Oh, that's tremendous. Our guy John Boogshalby and Rick Sutcliffe on Pete Crow Armstrong's triple last night. As ugly as a season can be at times, as far back as the Cubs are, all of that, there's still joy to be had watching baseball, and there's Boog finding it and feeling it. Seriously, and watch him run is perfect because as soon as that ball was hit, you're like, triple. It's going to the gap. My only question was, is it going to get by the fielders and get all the way to the wall? Because if so, triple. And then he scores on a ground ball after that. There's absolutely no play of the plate. Do you have the ground ball?
All right, you know, to me, with two strikes in that situation, you get a fastball and it gets a lot of the plate. You know, that's an kind of a...
Bush bounces one. Crow Armstrong scores. Perez will make the play unassisted. A sharply hit ball. Crow Armstrong took off immediately. The veteran first baseman Perez gloved it, looked up, and saw where Crow Armstrong was, which is to say more than halfway home. And he said, I'm not going to mess with that at the plate. I'm going to get the sure thing at first.
That's a great call by Pat Hughes, giving you everything you need visually. If he doesn't say it, it doesn't exist in our minds as radio listeners, and that is absolutely perfect. Yeah, I mean, it's like Sal Perez. Okay, so it's an out for, but boy, that is a joy to watch that guy do those two things. And because he can do those two things, I'd like to see him on base more. Like to see him, take some pitches, draw a walk. He'll work on that. I'd like to see him try and scrap his way onto base. He tries to bunt sometimes, but I wish he had an offensive approach that was a little more slappy. I wish he had a little more Ichiro in him. That would be fun. Let's go to Ben in Queens on the score. Ben, good morning. You're on Hit and Run. How are you?
How's it going, Spiegs? I hope you're doing well. So listen, I hope not to derail our baseball conversation.
No chance.
But I wanted to talk a little bit about a comment that Boogshalby made about Seiya Suzuki a couple of weeks ago. And it kind of revolves around, you know, an ongoing peeve of mine with MLB. He said that Seiya Suzuki had the most strikes called off the plate in Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. And he said he thought he had a theory as to why that was. And his theory was that Seiya Suzuki never says anything. He never says anything. He never tries to defend himself. He doesn't say anything. Now, Seiya Suzuki's interpreter got canned a couple weeks ago, and nobody really went into it. Nobody asked questions. As you know, I'm a nationally licensed interpreter. I work here in New York on a bunch of different levels. I kind of know what interpreting is about. Now, if you look between Edwin Stanberry and Toy, you could just tell, even if you didn't speak Japanese, you could tell, well, I have more confidence in what Edwin Stanberry is saying, just the way he rendered what Shota says. If you look, every once in a while, he goes back and verifies. You know, is that what you said? Yes, that's what. Okay, and then he goes on. Also, Edwin Stanberry.
Ben, this is dangerous territory for me because I value you and I appreciate your insight, but you yourself don't speak Japanese, and I know you do that for a living, but I worry. I can't just let you say one guy's better than the other I don't know. I worry. I mean, make your broader point, but maybe stay away from the accusations, if that makes sense.
I will do that. I want to know what the Cubs' expectations are for Japanese language interpreters. Are they also a handler? Are they also a navigator? We've seen the Michigas with Shohei's interpreter. Spanish interpreters don't do that in MLB because there's so many Spanish speakers throughout the bench and throughout the coaching staff
yes.
that they just serve as interpreters. Now, what I want to know is if the past 2.5 years, all the problems we've seen with the Yips and some of the problems have been through communication because the interpreter was not the person who it was supposed to be, and if they should do something different for the Spanish language interpreters and get actually somebody there with baseball apart from the language to help them out that the Spanish speakers have. And I don't want to cast aspersions.
No, that's
but the thing is, hey, I can because I work in this and I know what's up, and I'll just stop right there. I love you, Spiegs. And I think maybe this is part of the problem. Somebody should ask Jed Hoyer this. What is your expectation of the Japanese interpreters? Thank you. Goodbye.
I 100% agree with that. 100%. And in fact, I broached this very topic on Parkinson Spiegel over the course of the last week and a half. Can you look, Sean, do we have, when I asked Jed Hoyer about Seiya Suzuki and the anxiety that is clearly there in right field, let me know if you can find that Q&A, which is from our conversation, and I know Tanny cut it up as a separate. We can play it later in the hour if you can't find it. But I 100% think those questions need to be asked of Jed, and they were not in a 26-minute media session the other day. Because, yes, these guys are expected to be handlers. And as we know from the Shohei news story, they often become life coaches and personal managers and all of that. And it did come out that Seiya's interpreter was communicating everything. And the other night, as Seiya is copping to I should have caught that fly ball, it was Edwin Stanbury there instead of Toy and him explaining it. Because the stuff about anxiety in right field can be tricky to communicate to a ball player. Sean, do you have it or no? Should we do it later? We'll do it later. It's fine. All right. So because it can be hard. How do you talk to a player about his anxiety and try to help him with a mental issue that's happening in right field with the Yips if you're not even allowed to speak directly to him? I'd be shocked if the dismissal of the interpreter had nothing to do with that. I'd be shocked. I don't know. So it's absolutely worthy of follow-up, and I wish the beat folks had a chance to ask Jed about it, but there was a lot on the hopper. Next time they get a chance to talk to him, I hope they do, because I find it a fascinating topic. Thank you for the call. Jack is in Wilmette on 670 The Score. Hello, Jack. How are you?
Hey, Speaks. How you doing?
I'm good. Talk to me.
What's up, Matt? Pedro Grifone actually was given a softball team. How does anybody know if he's a good manager or a bad manager? He's in last place. His team can't hit. They can't field. They can't run. The same thing on the Cubs side, and yet the manager of the Cubs side gets no pay from anybody. Pedro Grifone is an idiot, but the Cub manager, it's the players. The only team, it's him. How is that possible?
Well, because it's not binary. You know, the conversation might sound like it's binary. Oh, this is a problem, and that is not a problem, and it's black and white. It's not. I mean, Jim Deshaies said he lives in the gray, that he believes in the gray. Baseball conversations are in the gray. The Sox are not the worst team in baseball because of Pedro Grifol. They don't have – everybody knows that. But – the stuff that we do know about Pedro Grifol that we've learned about is worrisome and troubling as a manager. And there's all kinds of different specific things I can point to. Last year, when there were some good players here and he was exposed, this year with some stuff that's gone on where it sure seems like there's some weird kind of fraud type personal communication from the guy. That is a big issue. Now, with Council, again, it's shades of gray. He was given a decent team and not a great team. He has gotten some heat and does deserve some heat. But in the nuance of who deserves more blame on that, it's Jed. It's Jed and the team building. But this stuff is not binary. So calling up to win an argument on this or to shift an argument is folly when you're not dealing with a black and white issue, in my opinion. We got to do team of the moment later on in this show. This is the latest we've ever done it. Latest we've ever done it. This is Marcus on the south side of the Score. Hello, Marcus.
Where it speaks.
How's it going?
No, I'm just joking. Hey, man. I just feel like you got to trade Crochet right now because he was a prodigy considering the fact that he was able to start, man, and do as much as he's done so far. You know, the guy just came off of injury. It's almost like a Zach LaVine kind of scenario, whereas, you know, we thought we were better with him. Now we can't get rid of him. You got to get the value out of him now. The Sox aren't going to be relevant for the next 2 or 3 years, Speaks.
Yeah.
Fetty, man, Fetty's about the same scenario. You know, it's a total rebuild. Just make it a whole dumpster fire and start from scratch, man. Thanks for taking the call.
All right, thanks, Marcus. Yeah, Marcus just wants to go deeper. I get it. I just think there is nothing more valuable than a front-of-the-rotation ace, and that's what Crochet seems to be. That said, if you are going to go this far back and you got a guy who you are worried about, if you can get a real offer, if you get a real legit offer, I'm telling you, three position players that you feel like can eventually be good, at least one of them like MLB ready, one guy who plugs in for the rest of the year, another guy who goes to camp with a chance to make the team next year, probably will, considering this roster, another guy a little bit lower. You get that. I don't care about the fourth and fifth piece. You get three pieces like that of consequence, I'll be interested. One more segment of your phone calls. A team of the moment coming up a little bit later in this hour. And we've got other stuff to deal with. I need to do a bit of service for Cub fans. I will explain and expound on the Cubs making a small buy yesterday in a trade. What does that actually mean? So we've got that. And then we're going to talk about getting more offense into baseball with the help of a brilliant idea that I got from a listener. Oh, my God. I think you'll be fascinated by this idea. I'll bring that up to you probably at the top of the hour on 670 The Score. Keep calling at 312-644-6767. By the way, Mully and Haw will be live from Bears training camp at Hallis Hall from 5:30 to 10 a.m. this Tuesday. They'll also be hitting the road and broadcasting live from the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton this Thursday and Friday from 5:30 to 10. Wow, big week for those guys with exclusive interviews with special guests in Canton and reacting to the Hall of Fame game. It's all presented by ChevyDrivesChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Keep listening to Hit and Run right here on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
O'Neal Cruz, and he sends this one soaring out of here. What a wallop for O'Neal Cruz! You'll ever see. That was incredible. 116 miles an hour off the bat. Joe, I looked up when that ball got to its apex and I thought that it was going to hit the roof. I kid you not.
That guy. Oh, sweet mother of God. That guy is so big and so strong and so fast. I mean, next time you're at a Pirates game, just remind yourself that he's a shortstop. You're like, what? How is that possible? And then just the power. The guy hit two homers or two balls at 121 mile an hour in May. Those are his two fastest, the hardest hit of the StatCast era. But this one that he hit on yesterday was the longest of his career and the third longest in Pirates history. And the fourth home run of at least 450 for O'Neal Cruz. I mean, these are BP-type results for that guy.
I think he smoked one like 447 feet this week, too. So just barely missing that 350 mark. He is hitting some taters, man.
All that said, the Pirates have lost the first two of their series against the Arizona Diamondbacks.
That's so baseball.
It is absolutely 100% baseball. And Arizona continues to play well. Arizona is a half game behind the New York Mets. The New York Mets, who are there, I mean, very close to the Padres and the Braves in the hunt for the wild card. And then you've got the D-backs. And then a bit of distance before Cardinals, Pirates, Giants, and none of those are the team of the moment. So you get to guess who the team of the moment is. Well, I might have mentioned them. Stan is in Bellwood. Don't guess, Stan. I know you're thinking about it, but don't guess. We'll do it in the next segment. But good morning. How are you?
Okay. I really did think about it, but Steve, but I think I know who it is. I won't spoil it.
Thank you.
Listen, you... Oh, and by the way, talking about home runs, Steve, O'Neill Cruz is killing it. But did you see the bomb that Royce Lewis hit last night?
I did not see Royce Lewis's, yeah.
Oh, my God. Don't leave his name out when you're talking about young players that's going to be dominating the game, you know, in the next few years. He's just got to keep his health together. You know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes, yes.
He's Killer Brew Light. But, hey, you posed the question earlier in the show about whether or not we're rooting for the White Sox to break the all-time record for losses. I'm going to tell you something. The White Sox are going to have 100 losses by Labor Day. Let that sink in. That still leaves about 30 or 32 games left after that. But it doesn't matter whether the White Sox – I'm not rooting for it, but I'm pretty sure it's going to happen. But in my mind, they're the worst team in baseball history, whether they break the record or not.
Mm-hmm.
They're the worst team of my lifetime, the worst team that I've ever seen, and I'm old enough that that includes the 1962 Mets as well. But the difference is the 62 Mets, Spiegs, were an expansion team. The whole roster was compiled of rag arm bum pitchers, double and triple A cast offs, and washed up, you know, 38, 39 year old veterans like Richie Ashburn and Gil Hodges and Gene Woodling and Gus Bell.
Uh-huh.
It was a comedy troupe more than it was a baseball team. Casey Stengel was asleep on the bench half the time. They could not play. It was embarrassing. It was funny and embarrassing. The White Sox have a far superior roster and better pitching for sure than the 1962 Mets, and they're still every bit as bad. So the record is irrelevant, and as far as Garrett Crochet is concerned, I'm like you. I don't want to see him traded, but I think it's necessary. The White Sox are so bad that if they trade Crochet and or Robert and improve their team by 20 games next year, they'll still only be a 60-win team. So it's just desperate times right now. They're pathetic, and they're going to break the record. And even if they don't, they're still every bit as bad as the 62 Mets.
Thank you, Stan. Great stuff. Yeah, man, it is absolutely horrific. And you're right about the quality of Crochet and Fetty and Drew Thorpe until Friday night. Wow, that happened on Friday night. Note to people, don't pick up Drew Thorpe for a spot start against the Seattle Mariners next time. It seemed to make all the sense in the world to me. But anyway, I think you're right that they are worse. That they are worse than the 62 Mets because they have better players. And this is not an expansion team. You know, there's no way they should be this bad. So everybody should be embarrassed. There have been 2 10-game losing streaks in MLB all season long. One by the White Sox from May 22nd through June 6th when they lost 14 in a row. And right now when they've lost 13 in a row.
Oh, so both of them.
Both of them are the White Sox.
That's usually bad.
A 14 and a 13. And that's it. That's it on the entire season. Absolutely brutal. This is Brendan in Morton Grove, who's now on 670 The Score. Good morning, Brendan.
Morning, Speaks. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
As always. Appreciate your show, man. Love what you do.
Thank you.
Another young player to watch, man, is Reese Hins on the Reds, man. He's going to be hitting a lot of home runs in the future too, man.
Yeah, the Rhys Hines thing, it feels like the Aristides Aquino thing that happened for the Reds a few years back. It's another toolsy guy who didn't end up having much of a career. Royce Lewis was number one overall in the draft. This is an unbelievably talented guy who has had myriad injuries while on his way up and now at the bigs. So the talent level, I think, is a bit different. But appreciate you bringing up Hines. What you got, Brendan? What do you want to talk about?
So listening to AJ and Canerco talk about the Sox last night. Well, I got a couple of thoughts on both sides, but I'll get to the Sox first. Maybe the Sox aren't as far as we think they are. You know, in 05, in a so-called rebuild year, if we keep Crochet, maybe he can be like a Burley. Maybe Vaughn steps it up. Sheets, you got Corey Lee. Maybe keep DeYoung and like add some, athletic, dynamic players like Canerco saying, kind of tool up a little bit in the offseason. Maybe we can turn this around. And then with the Cubs, man, they messed it up by trading Contreras, man. They're totally undervaluing the catcher position. If you look at for both sides of town in 05 and 16, you know, you had Pierzynski, and then we had Miggy and Ross in 16. So, I mean, you got to get production out of the catcher position. And just go ahead.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Yeah, the Contreras thing is interesting. They obviously didn't like Wilson. Something happened. Like they had exhausted their that relationship, and ended up getting nothing for him. And it looks bad. Looks real bad and weird in retrospect. And then all the catching offense has just been so brutal. And Miguel Amaya is swinging the bat a lot better. And looks much better. And if that had been the case earlier this year, it would have been a much easier pill to swallow. But yeah, the Contreras thing deserves some more exploration and examination. I don't agree that the White Sox aren't that far away. I don't agree with some of the stuff you said. They should not keep Paul DeJong. They should trade Paul DeJong for absolutely anything they can get. They should trade Paul DeJong, and they should trade Tommy Pham. And they should trade Eric Fetty, and they should trade Luis Robert. And if they're going to trade Crochet and get a ton, then I guess you have to kind of like Stan said. Offensively, they're so nowhere, it's outrageous. They have the worst on-base percentage in baseball by 12 points. They have the worst OPS in baseball by 32 points. A 620 team OPS. Team! They're horrific offensively. Pitching-wise, you're seeing some stuff with the rotation. Now, if you trade Crochet and Noah Schultz is up here next year, does it feel just as good? I don't think so, but they could probably convince themselves of that. And then you'll see some more like Jake Eater and people like that. They're not close. They are not close. This is B-Guy on the Score. B-Guy, good morning. You're on Hit and Run.
Morning, Speaks. How's it going?
Very good. What? So, B-Guy, are you B-Hack guy? What are you?
No, I am a beekeeper.
Oh.
I'm a beekeeper. So I'm out in the field listening to the Hit and Run. And when I'm ever out in the field, typically listen to the Score. So love the show. Father's Day thing that you did years ago is should be in the Radio Hall of Fame. It's phenomenal.
Which one? Are you just taking the Father's Day calls, you mean? Or like
this was back in 2018. You did a great Father's Day episode, and it was right after I had my firstborn, so it really hit home. And you know, when you're not
awesome.
Killing it, giving us the baseball coverage, I appreciate the sentimental romanticism of baseball always.
Thank you, sir. How are the bees? How many bees do you have out there that you're keeping, sir?
So I actually own a business that we have 300 hives that we manage around the Chicago area.
Oh, my God. 300 hives. Yeah. How many bees in a hive?
About 60,000 per hive. Matter-of-factly. Yes.
Random question. Do you ever read the story Royal Jelly by Roald Dahl?
No, but
okay.
Yes, I'm familiar with it. I've not read it, but yeah, Love Roald Dahl, James the Giant Peach,
yes.
Fantastic Mr. Fox. Yep.
And Royal Jelly is a short horror story about a beekeeper. Yeah, it's in an incredible book called Tales of the Unexpected. That Roald Dahl, it's a short stories for adults that are just scary and awesome. So I recommend checking
Phenomenal.
It out, sir.
Good
All right.
stuff.
All right.
Good stuff.
All right. Tell me.
The reason
we've covered
the
bees.
For my call.
That's not why you called. I know.
No, I called because I wanted to discuss Craig Counsell's usage or lack thereof of Patrick Wisdom. I think Patrick Wisdom has no spot here at the Cubs, right? He's not going to play ahead of Morel. You're not going to put him at first base over Bush. So you have a professional hitter that can mash, which was on display once again last night with the grand slam, but he's getting no runs at DH, which is befuddling to me based upon, you know, the numbers that he's put up in the last 15 games.
Mm-hmm. It's a good it's a good thing to look at and ask about, because Patrick Wisdom has 14 at-bats in the month of July. 14 at-bats all month. He had 26 at-bats in the month of June. But as they are, like, frantically looking around for slug, he just hasn't been there. They believe slavishly in matchups. And I don't know what they're basing it on. There's obviously as simple as lefty-righty. There's as simple as, you know, fastball, a guy who uses a lot of that. Then there is more advanced, like pitch tunneling versus the plane of your swing, you know, and there's all of that. Whatever stuff they're using to try and look at the matchups, Patrick Wisdom just hasn't been something they've chosen. This is made more difficult when you don't want to play Christopher Morel at third base and you're committed to Morel and he gets some of your DH at-bats and stuff like that. And then Michael Bush has been good. Michael Bush has been good and deserves to play against most matchups. But I have been disappointed in the way that both Wisdom and Bodie have been used since they've been up here. It often has felt like the Cubs are just kind of trotting out people and seeing what they get with some of the basics. I've also been disappointed that Miles Mastroboni and Nick Madrigal were both on this roster at the same time for a while. Like, the bottom of the roster, I thought there'd be a lot more kids. And I know the PCA is up here and he's playing, but didn't you think by now that we would have seen either Owen Casey or Matt Shaw, who's all the way down at AA, or maybe Brennan Davis we would have seen if he stayed healthy? When Canario's been here, he hasn't been used. And so, yeah, there's been a... I agree with concerns about the bottom of the roster usage on this team. And yes, we all know that the top of the roster and the guys that you're paying needed to produce, and that's why it hasn't worked. But your questions about the bottom of the roster are thoroughly fair. Let's see if we can find another beekeeper. Joe in St. Charles, are you a beekeeper by any chance? Oh, yeah. That was hold music from Joe? That's right. All right, bring it down a little. Where is that? Why does Joe have hold music? Is he calling from work? Bring it back up, man. Come on. Oh, yeah. Sweet.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. All right. Thanks, Joe. We'll pop him on hold. And Joe, I think, has missed his opportunity. That's too bad. Poor guy. This is Chuck in Glenview on the score. Hello, Chuck. You're on Hit and Run.
As a old geezer who witnessed the Don Gutteridge 1970 White Sox, my heart is broken. And my heart is broken because in April, there are two things I wish would be over. The presidential election and the White Sox season. I knew this was over when that horrific week in August when the oddly enough, the Mariners were in town and the Sox got clobbered and Jerry announced we're going to get rid of Hahn and Williams. And then the next day, Tony La Russa, a guy I used to admire till he decided in his dotage he could manage the White Sox, and mm-hmm. the owner in his dotage thought he could do it.
Yeah,
was at the cell with without his hair colored, interviewing both our Chris Getz mm-hmm. and Pedro Gafal. I knew it was over. I mean, if Tony La Russa had any baseball sense, Lurie Garcia would be the veteran on this team pulling things together.
Yeah.
But Garcia is sitting on the sidelines making more money than Ohtani because of the structured salary by Ohtani.
Hmm.
I'm horrified by this. I mean, in Gutteridge's time, we had Bill Vec, John Allen. The Sox were bankrupt almost. They're not bankrupt now. They just got stupid rich people running. You don't have a Bill Vec coming in who's going to hire to Harry Carey as a baseball announcer, and said they fire Benintendi, who was net firing, but let him go, who was a White Sox fan and loved the team. We're not going to get a general manager like Roland Heeman. We're not going to get a manager like Chuck Tanner, and there's no Dick Allen out there.
Well, you got to dream of a baseball guy like Roland Heeman. You got to dream of finding that guy. That's your best ticket to fixing stuff, is to go outside the organization and find a brilliant young baseball mind and then hand him the keys and back away. They didn't do that. They didn't bother to interview anybody last year. The top baseball job is open, and they gave it to the farm director because Jerry wanted continuity. How's that going? How's that going? He thought it'd be the easiest way is the guy who's here and who knows it is so freaking lazy. Insane. Drives me crazy. That's the worst. Hey, you got to go outside the org and try to find Roland Heeman. Everything else I know is a fun historical comp, but, I mean, go find Dave Dombrowski. Oh, yeah, I guess he was in-house before he got gone. So, no, Heeman is a better call. Unbelievable. All right, one last phone call. Let's go to Bob in Munster. Bob, you're on Hit and Run on the Score.
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, man.
I listen to you every Sunday. I don't know what spawned me to call, but I guess I've been so tired of hearing about, as far as the Cubs are concerned, you know, closing here and defense there. It's a big problem with the team, and I understand it. But to me personally, all year long, all I kept thinking about, and I don't know where it came from, but well, I know where it came from, but he's watching the Cubs, is Brad Pitt in Moneyball. And you know, the conversation he had, you know, everybody's telling him about how great this hitter is, how great this hitter is, how great this hitter is. And he simply replies, well, if he's such a good hitter, why doesn't he hit? We're paying all this money to these guys to produce, and they're not producing. I mean, I personally feel that we've blown more games by lack of production in key moments throughout this season than we have in blown saves or some boneheaded errors in the field. And I just don't know how you get around that. I mean, you know, I don't have an answer to it, but to me, that's our biggest problem.
Absolutely, it is. The offense failing has been the biggest problem. The offense failing would have, the offense not failing would have given you more of a cushion in the bullpen. And I mean, the starting pitching has been great. And as bad as the defense has been every once in a while, or running into outs on the bases, the offense failing would have, not failing would have covered up a lot of that. That said, everything was all happening at the same time, and it was bad. But remember, this Cubs bullpen has found it. Give Council credit. That's the number one bullpen in baseball since the 1st of June. Number one. And again, give the manager credit for finding those guys and figuring out the roles and finding a way to do it. It's just that the offense being broken and the guys that you're paying big money to, like Dansby Swanson, not producing, the catcher position being empty, Hap not producing early on, Bellinger having a step backwards year and being as injured as he has been. That stuff has been the killer, and not having a superstar to help carry you when everything else is falling. All right, we may have time for another call or two before the top of the hour, but when we come back, we will do team of the moment. Who is the team of the moment around baseball? It's not the White Sox, who have lost 13 in a row. I do love that suggestion from a texter, though. I mean, come on! 13 in a row, that's impressive!
I thought about texting you about it last night.
Yeah, no, we'll look for better. We'll look for better on the flip side. Lots more Hit and Run to come. Almost another hour. Keep it here on the Score.
Hit and Run, Sunday mornings, 9 a.m. to noon on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
Here's the 1-0. Abrams swings, lines it into right field. Johnson coming on. He's got it, and the ballgame is over. Dylan Cease says no hit. The Washington Nationals. On a rainy Thursday in D.C., the Padres will celebrate. They have mobbed Cease on the infield, and the Pods sweep the Nats with a 3-0 victory. Cease came close time and time and time again, and today he gets it done.
It was the team of the moment, offering entertainment. The team of the moment, they caught our eyes.
The team of the moment is the San Diego Padres, who are playing very, very, very good baseball. Over the last 30 days, they are pitching with the fourth best team ERA in baseball. Over the last 30 days, they are hitting with the fourth best batting average in baseball. You know what they're doing? They're winning games on the road. What if I told you? What if I told you that in the last 15 games on the road, the San Diego Padres are 12-3. 12-3 on the road.
That's ridiculous.
They are 7-1 on this current road trip, which includes a series win in Cleveland, a sweep of the Nationals, and now having won the first two against the Baltimore Orioles. The Padres have won 7 in a row overall, 8 of their last 10, and are getting incredible performances across the board. Dylan Cease with the no-hitter, as you heard right there. Michael King flirted with a no-hitter last weekend in Cleveland. Offensively, you know some of the guys that have been carrying them and some of the bigger names. And then there's one of my favorite players, the 31-year-old first-time All-Star, Jurickson Profar, who hit two on Friday, two homers, and they were both big. Here's the first.
There he goes again, and a fly ball hit to right field. Struck pretty well. Santander going back at the wall. It is gone! Two-run home run for Jurickson Profar. Ties the score 2-2. Takes it out to right at Camden Yards.
Last two times up for Profar, he's thrown him the changeup, got him to fly out. This one stays on it. Oh, it's got that sound to the right center field gap. That's huge. Right back in this one.
So that tied it. Then later on, Profar came up with a chance to give them the lead.
1-1 pitch in the air to center field, sending Mullins back onto the track at the wall. It's gone! Profar with his second home run of the night. Two-run shot. Puts the Padres on top 6-4. Jurickson Profar.
Oh, you talk about clutch. You talk about turning around a fastball. That one was belt buckle high. Straightaway center field. He just continues to make us say, wow.
He's awesome. And one of only four active players who homered as a teenager in MLB. Him, Bryce Trout, Juan Soto, Bryce Harper, Mike Trout.
I like that Bryce Trout, though.
Yeah, Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, Juan Soto, and Jurickson Profar are the four active players.
That's so cool.
Who homered as teenagers. The Padres absolutely rolling, pitching great, hitting just enough, making plenty of contact, and their fans must be happy. Must be nice. A texter says, is this a Sporting News Radio throwback, team of the moment? Hot damn. That is somebody used to listen to me at Sporting News? You're exactly right. I've recorded myself singing those Asia vocals in my bedroom while living in Los Angeles in 2007, maybe 2008. Works better as a baseball bit. And no, I did not frame an Asia poster. I did not do that myself. Another texter. Speaks, did you get a chance to look up how many pitchers this year have been pulled, even though they have a no-hitter going? This came up the other day on Parkinson Spiegel, and Shane Reardon did the research, noted baseball researcher Shane Reardon, that since 1956, it was, 33 pitchers have been pulled after 7 innings with a no-hitter going. And in the last 4 years, it has been 16 of them. So more than half, I guess just less than half, but 16 of the 33 that have ever, since 1956, been pulled after 7 no-hit innings have happened over the last 4 years. So, yes, no-hitters are going to be much more rare because more people are getting pulled with a chance to do it because of pitch counts and because of wear and tear on the arm and those concerns. So, yeah, it is much more common. Another texter. Speaks, how did the Tributosaurus shows go this Thursday and Friday? Thank you very much. Yeah, we became the Grateful Dead at Martyrs. They were awesome. I'm not going to lie. They were freaking awesome, and I had just incredible musical joy. I, people, am among the luckiest human beings in the world. I get to play music and talk sports for a living. Let me knock on some wood, thank the lucky stars, kiss it up to Jesus, whatever I got to do. Anybody and everybody, thank you. Let's keep it rolling.
35. Covered all the bases.
Yeah, right? I just want to cover everything. Praise. I'll start short of that one. Stop short of that one right now. Thank you to all the callers and the listeners. Guess what? Stick around. We got 35 more bonus minutes of Hit and Run. If you are on hold, we will get to you. But there's other stuff I want to get to before we get out of here, including some big picture conversation about offense and baseball, including a great idea from a listener, Mike in LaGrange Park. He gave me an unbelievable idea. So we'll get to that. And I will explain and expound on the Cubs making a buy yesterday and a trade with Toronto. That's all coming in the next 35 minutes here on Hit and Run on the Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Major leaguers, and that's not even counting Corbin Carroll.
And that one is ripped out towards right center. Watch him run. And he's thinking three. There he goes. And he dives in with a three-bagger. Pete Crowell Armstrong with a three-bagger. Watch him run.
There wasn't a doubt in his mind. He didn't need a third base coach to tell him. Good does that have to feel after going for a couple of weeks without a hit?
I would legitimately come to this ballpark and sit here with no one in the stands and just watch him run the bases and have them hit him fly balls. It's that entertaining.
I agree.
Oh, that's tremendous. Our guy John Boogshambi and Rick Sutcliffe on Pete Crowe Armstrong's triple last night. As ugly as a season can be at times, as far back as the Cubs are, all of that, there's still joy to be had watching baseball, and there's Boog finding it and feeling it. Seriously. And watch him run is perfect, because as soon as that ball was hit, you're like, triple. Triple. It's going to the gap. My only question was, is it going to get by the fielders and get all the way to the wall? Because if so, triple. And then he scores on a ground ball after that. There's absolutely no play of the plate. Do you have the ground ball?
All right, you know, to me, with two strikes in that situation, you get a fastball, and it gets a lot of the plate. You know, that's an kind of a
Bush bounces one. Crowe Armstrong scores. Perez will make the play unassisted. A sharply hit ball. Crowe Armstrong took off immediately. The veteran first baseman Perez gloved it, looked up, and saw where Crowe Armstrong was, which is to say more than halfway home, and he said, I'm not going to mess with that at the plate. I'm going to get the sure thing at first.
That's a great call by Pat Hughes, giving you everything you need visually. If he doesn't say it, it doesn't exist in our minds as radio listeners, and that is absolutely perfect. Yeah, I mean, it's like Sal Perez. Okay, so it's an out, but boy, that's... That is a joy to watch that guy do those two things. And because he can do those two things, I'd like to see him on base more. Like to see him, take some pitches, draw a walk. He'll work on that. I'd like to see him try and scrap his way onto base. He tries to bunt sometimes, but I wish he had an offensive approach that was a little more slappy. I wish he had a little more Ichiro in him. That would be fun. Let's go to Ben in Queens on the Score. Ben, good morning. You're on Hit and Run. How are you?
How's it going, Spiegs? I hope you're doing well. So listen, I hope not to derail our baseball conversation.
No chance.
But I wanted to talk a little bit about a comment that Boogshambi made about Seiya Suzuki a couple of weeks ago. And it kind of revolves around, you know, an ongoing peeve of mine with MLB. He said that Seiya Suzuki had the most strikes called off the plate in Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. And he said he thought he had a theory as to why that was. And his theory was that Seiya Suzuki never says anything. He never says anything. He never tries to defend himself. He doesn't say anything. Now, Seiya Suzuki's interpreter got canned a couple weeks ago, and nobody really went into it. Nobody asked questions. As you know, I'm a nationally licensed interpreter. I work here in New York on a bunch of different levels. I kind of know what interpreting is about. Now, if you look between Edwin Stanberry and Toy, you could just tell, even if you didn't speak Japanese, you could tell, well, I have more confidence in what Edwin Stanberry is saying, just the way he rendered what Shota says. If you look, every once in a while, he goes back and verifies. You know, is that what you said? Yes, that's what. Okay, and then he goes on. Also, Edwin Stanberry.
Ben, this is dangerous territory for me because I value you and I appreciate your insight, but you yourself don't speak Japanese, and I know you do that for a living, but I worry. I can't just let you say one guy's better than the other. I don't know. I worry. I mean, make your broader point, but maybe stay away from the accusations, if that makes sense.
I will do that. I want to know what the Cubs' expectations are for Japanese language interpreters. Are they also a handler? Are they also a navigator? We've seen the Michigas with Shohei's interpreter. Spanish interpreters don't do that in MLB because there's so many Spanish speakers throughout the bench and throughout the coaching staff,
yes,
that they just serve as interpreters. Now, what I want to know is, if the past 2.5 years, all the problems we've seen with the Yips and some of the problems have been through communication because the interpreter was not the person who it was supposed to be, and if they should do something different for the Spanish language interpreters and get actually somebody there with baseball apart from the language to help them out that the Spanish speakers have. And I don't want to cast aspersions.
No, that's,
but the thing is, hey, I can, because I work in this and I know what's up, and I'll just stop right there. I love you, Spiegs. And I think maybe this is part of the problem. Somebody should ask Jed Hoyer this. What is your expectation of the Japanese interpreters? Thank you. Goodbye.
I 100% agree with that. 100%. And in fact, I broached this very topic on Parkinson Spiegel over the course of the last week and a half with, can you look, Sean, do we have, when I asked Jed Hoyer about Seiya Suzuki and the anxiety that is clearly there in right field. Let me know if you can find that Q&A, which is from our conversation. And I know Tanny cut it up as a separate. We can play it later in the hour if you can't find it. But I 100% think those questions need to be asked of Jed. And they were not in a 26-minute media session the other day. Because, yes, these guys are expected to be handlers. And as we know from the Shohei, news story, they often become life coaches and personal managers and all of that. And it did come out that Seiya's interpreter was communicating everything. And the other night, as Seiya is copping to, I should have caught that fly ball, it was Edwin Stanberry there instead of Toy and him explaining it. Because the stuff about anxiety in right field can be tricky to communicate to a ball player. Sean, do you have it or no? Should we do it later? We'll do it later. It's fine. All right. So, because it can be hard. How do you talk to a player about his anxiety and try to help him with a mental issue that's happening in right field with the Yips if you're not even allowed to speak directly to him? I'd be shocked if the dismissal of the interpreter had nothing to do with that. I'd be shocked. I don't know. So it's absolutely worthy of follow up. And I wish the beat folks had a chance to ask Jed about it. But there was a lot on the hopper. Next time they get a chance to talk to him, I hope they do, because I find it a fascinating topic. Thank you for the call. Jack is in Wilmette on 670 The Score. Hello, Jack. How are you?
Hey, Speaks. How you doing?
I'm good. Talk to me.
What's up, Matt? Pedro Grifone actually was given a softball team. How does anybody know if he's a good manager or a bad manager? He's in last place. His team can't hit. They can't field. They can't run. The same thing on the Cubs side, and yet the manager of the Cubs side gets no pay from anybody. Pedro Grifone is an idiot, but the Cub manager, it's the players. The other team, it's him. How is that possible?
Well, because it's not binary. You know, the conversation might sound like it's binary. Oh, this is a problem, and that is not a problem, and it's black and white. It's not. I mean, Jim Deshaies said he lives in the gray, that he believes in the gray. Baseball conversations are in the gray. The Sox are not the worst team in baseball because of Pedro Grifol. They don't have – everybody knows that. But the stuff that we do know about Pedro Grifol that we've learned about is worrisome and troubling as a manager. And there's all kinds of different specific things I can point to. Last year when there were some good players here – and he was exposed this year with some stuff that's gone on where it sure seems like there's some weird kind of fraud type personal communication from the guy. That is a big issue. Now, with counsel, again, it's shades of gray. He was given a decent team and not a great team. He has gotten some heat and does deserve some heat. But in the nuance of who deserves more blame on that, it's Jed. It's Jed and the team building. But this stuff is not binary. So calling up to win an argument on this or to shift an argument is folly when you're not dealing with a black and white issue, in my opinion. We got to do Team of the Moment later on in this show. This is the latest we've ever done it. Latest we've ever done it. This is Marcus on the south side of the Score. Hello, Marcus.
Where it speaks.
How's it going?
No, I'm just joking. Hey, man. I just feel like you got to trade Crochet right now because he was a prodigy considering the fact that he was able to start, man, and do as much as he's done so far. You know, the guy just came off injury. It's almost like a Zach LaVine kind of scenario, whereas, you know, we thought we were better with him. Now we can't get rid of him. You got to get the value out of him now. The Sox aren't going to be relevant for the next 2 or 3 years, Speaks.
Yeah.
Fetty, man. Freddie's about the same scenario. You know, it's a total rebuild. Just make it a whole dumpster fire and start from scratch, man. Thanks for taking the call.
All right, thanks, Marcus. Yeah, Marcus just wants to go deeper. I get it. I just think there is nothing more valuable than a front-of-the-rotation ace, and that's what Crochet seems to be. That said, if you are going to go this far back and you got a guy who you are worried about, if you can get a real offer, if you get a real legit offer, I'm telling you, three position players – that you feel like can eventually be good. At least one of them, like MLB ready. One guy who plugs in for the rest of the year. Another guy who goes to camp with a chance to make the team next year. Probably will, considering this roster. Another guy a little bit lower. You get that. I don't care about the fourth and fifth piece. You get three pieces like that of consequence, I'll be interested. One more segment of your phone calls. A team of the moment coming up a little bit later. In this hour, and we've got other stuff to deal with. I need to do a bit of service for Cub fans. I will explain and expound on the Cubs making a small buy yesterday in a trade. What does that actually mean? So we've got that. And then we're going to talk about getting more offense into baseball with the help of a brilliant idea that I got from a listener. Oh, my God. I think you'll be fascinated by this idea. I'll bring that up to you probably at the top of the hour on 670. The Score. Keep calling at 312-644-6767. By the way, Mully and Haw will be live from Bears training camp at Hallis Hall from 5:30 to 10 a.m. this Tuesday. They'll also be hitting the road and broadcasting live from the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton this Thursday and Friday from 5:30 to 10. Wow, big week for those guys with exclusive interviews with special guests in Canton and reacting to the Hall of Fame game. It's all presented by ChevyDrivesChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Keep listening to Hit and Run right here on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
O'Neal Cruz, and he sends this one soaring out of here. What a wallop for O'Neal Cruz! You'll ever see. That was incredible.
116 miles an hour off the bat. Joe, I looked up when that ball got to its apex and I thought that it was going to hit the roof. I kid you not.
That guy. Oh, sweet mother of God. That guy is so big and so strong and so fast. I mean, next time you're at a Pirates game, just remind yourself that he's a shortstop. You're like, what? How is that possible? And then just the power. The guy hit two homers or two balls at 121 mile an hour in May. Those are his two fastest, the hardest hit of the StatCast era. His, but this one that he hit on yesterday was the longest of his career and the third longest in Pirates history. And the fourth home run of at least 450 for O'Neill Cruz. I mean, these are BP-type results for that guy.
I think he smoked one like 447 feet this week, too, so just barely missing that 350 mark. He is hitting some taters, man.
All that said, the Pirates have lost the first two of their series against the Arizona Diamondbacks.
That's so baseball.
It is absolutely 100% baseball, and Arizona continues to play well. Arizona is a half game behind the New York Mets. The New York Mets, who are there, I mean, very close to the Padres and the Braves in the hunt for the wild card. And then you've got the D-backs, and then a bit of distance before Cardinals, Pirates, Giants, and none of those are the team of the moment. So you get to guess who the team of the moment is. Well, I might have mentioned them. Stan is in Bellwood. Don't guess, Stan. I know you're thinking about it, but don't guess. We'll do it in the next segment. But good morning. How are you?
Okay. I really did think about it, but Steve, but I think I know who it is. I won't spoil it.
Thank you.
Listen, you... Oh, and by the way, talking about home runs, Steve, O'Neill Cruz is killing it. But did you see the bomb that Royce Lewis hit last night?
I did not see Royce Lewis's, yeah.
Oh, my God. You don't leave his name out when you're talking about young players that's going to be dominating the game, in the next few years. He's just got to keep his health together. You know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes, yes.
He's Killer Brew Light. But, hey, you posed the question earlier in the show about whether or not we're rooting for the White Sox to break the all-time record for losses. I'm going to tell you something. The White Sox are going to have 100 losses by Labor Day. Let that sink in. That still leaves about 30 or 32 games left after that. But it doesn't matter whether the White Sox – I'm not rooting for it, but I'm pretty sure it's going to happen. But in my mind – they're the worst team in baseball history, whether they break the record or not.
Mm-hmm.
They're the worst team of my lifetime, the worst team that I've ever seen. And I'm old enough that includes the 1962 Mets as well. But the difference is the 62 Mets, Speaks, were an expansion team. The whole roster was compiled of rag arm bum pitchers, double and triple A cast-offs, and washed up, 38, 39-year-old veterans like Richie Ashburn and Gil Hodges and Gene Woodling and Gus Bell.
Uh-huh.
It was a comedy troupe more than it was a baseball team. Casey Stengel was asleep on the bench half the time. They could not play. It was embarrassing. It was funny and embarrassing. The White Sox have a far superior roster and better pitching for sure than the 1962 Mets, and they're still every bit as bad. So the record is irrelevant, and as far as Garrett Crochet is concerned, I'm like you. I don't want to see him traded, but I think it's necessary. The White Sox are so bad that if they trade Crochet and or Robert and improve their team by 20 games next year, they'll still only be a 60-win team. So it's just desperate times right now. They're pathetic, and they're going to break the record. And even if they don't, they're still every bit as bad as the 62 Mets.
Thank you, Stan. Great stuff. Yeah, man, it is absolutely horrific. And you're right about the quality of Crochet and Fetty and Drew Thorpe until Friday night. Wow! That happened on Friday night. Note to people, don't pick up Drew Thorpe for a spot start against the Seattle Mariners next time. It seemed to make all the sense in the world to me. But anyway, I think you're right that they are worse. That they are worse than the 62 Mets because they have better players. And this is not an expansion team. You know, there's no way they should be this bad. So everybody should be embarrassed. There have been two 10-game losing streaks in MLB all season long. One by the White Sox from May 22nd through June 6th when they lost 14 in a row. And right now when they've lost 13 in a row.
Oh, so both of them.
Both of them are the White Sox.
That's
a 14 and a 13. And that's it. That's it on the entire season. Absolutely brutal. This is Brendan in Morton Grove, who's now on 670 The Score. Good morning, Brendan.
Morning, Speaks. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
As always. Appreciate your show, man. Love what you do.
Thank you.
Another young player to watch, man, is Reese Hins on the Reds, man. He's going to be hitting a lot of home runs in the future, too, man.
Yeah, the Reese Hins thing, it feels like the Aristides Aquino thing that happened for the Reds a few years back. It's another toolsy guy who didn't end up having much of a career. Royce Lewis was number one overall in the draft. This is an unbelievably talented guy who has had myriad injuries while on his way up and now at the big. So the talent level, I think, is a bit different. But appreciate you bringing up Hines. What you got, Brendan? What do you want to talk about?
So listening to AJ and Canerco talk about the Sox last night, well, I got a couple of thoughts on both sides, but I'll get to the Sox first. Maybe the Sox aren't as far as we think they are. You know, in 05, in a so-called rebuild year, you know, if we keep Crochet, maybe he can be like a Burley. Maybe Vaughn steps it up, Sheets. You got Corey Lee. Maybe keep DeYoung and, like, add some, you know, athletic, dynamic players, like Canerco's saying, kind of tool up a little bit in the offseason. Maybe we can turn this around. And then with the Cubs, man, they messed it up by trading Contreras, man. They're totally undervaluing the catcher position. If you look at for both sides of town in 05 and 16, you know, you had Pruszynski, and then we had Miggy and Ross in 16. So, I mean, you got to get production out of the catcher position. And just go ahead.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Yeah, the Contreras thing is interesting. They obviously didn't like Wilson. Something happened. Like, they had exhausted their that relationship and ended up getting nothing for him. And it looks bad. Looks real bad. And weird in retrospect. And then all the catching offense has just been so brutal. And you know, Miguel Amaya is swinging the bat a lot better and looks much better. And if that had been the case earlier this year, it would have been a much easier pill to swallow. But yeah, the Contreras thing deserves some more exploration and examination. I don't agree that the White Sox aren't that far away. I don't agree with some of the stuff you said. They should not keep Paul DeYoung. They should trade Paul DeYoung for absolutely anything they can get. They should trade Paul DeYoung, and they should trade Tommy Pham, and they should trade Eric Fetty, and they should trade Luis Robert. And if they're going to trade Crochet and get a ton, then I guess you have to, kind of like Stan said. Offensively, they're so nowhere, it's outrageous. They have the worst on-base percentage in baseball by 12 points. They have the worst OPS in baseball by 32 points. A 620 team OPS. Team! They're horrific offensively. Pitching-wise, you're seeing some stuff with the rotation. Now, if you trade Crochet and Noah Schultz is up here next year, does it feel just as good? I don't think so, but they could probably convince themselves of that. And then you'll see some more like Jake Eater and you know, and people like that. They're not close. They are not close. This is B Guy on the Score. B Guy, good morning. You're on Hit and Run.
Morning, Speaks. How's it going?
Very good. So B Guy, are you B Hack Guy? What are you?
No, I am a beekeeper.
Oh.
I'm a beekeeper, so I'm out in the field listening to the Hit and Run, and when I'm ever out in the field, typically listen to the Score. So love the show.
That
your Father's Day thing that you did years ago is should be in the Radio Hall of Fame. It's phenomenal.
Which one? Are you just taking the Father's Day calls, you mean? Or like
this was back in 2018. You did a great Father's Day episode, and it was right after I had my firstborn, so it really hit home. And you know, when
That's
you're not
awesome.
Killing it giving us the baseball coverage. I appreciate the sentimental romanticism of baseball always.
Thank you, sir. How are the bees? How many bees do you have out there that you're keeping, sir?
So I actually own a business that we have 300 hives that we manage around the Chicago area.
Oh, my God. 300 hives. Yeah. How many bees in a hive?
About 60,000 per hive. Matter-of-factly. Yes.
Random question. Do you ever read the story Royal Jelly by Roald Dahl?
No, but okay. Yes, I'm familiar with it. I've not read it, but yeah, Love Roald Dahl, James the Giant Peach,
yes.
Fantastic Mr. Fox. Yep.
And Royal Jelly is a short horror story about a beekeeper. Yeah, it's in an incredible book called Tales of the Unexpected. That Roald Dahl, it's a short stories for adults that are just scary and awesome. So I recommend checking
Phenomenal.
It out, sir.
Good stuff.
All right. Tell me.
We've covered the bees.
That's not why you called. I know.
No, I called because I wanted to discuss Craig Counsell's usage or lack thereof of Patrick Wisdom. I think Patrick Wisdom has no spot here at the Cubs. Right? He's not going to play ahead of Morel. You're not going to put him at first base over Bush. So you have a professional hitter that can mash. Which was on display once again last night with the Grand Slam. But he's getting no runs at DH, which is befuddling to me based upon, you know, the numbers that he's put up in the last 15 games.
Mm-hmm. It's a good it's a good thing to look at and ask about because Patrick Wisdom has 14 at-bats in the month of July. 14 at-bats all month. He had 26 at-bats in the month of June. But as they are like frantically looking around for slug, it just hasn't been there. They believe slavishly in matchups. And I don't know what they're basing it on. There's obviously as simple as lefty righty. There's as simple as, you know, fastball, a guy who uses a lot of that. Then there is more advanced like pitch tunneling versus the plane of your swing, you know, and there's all of that, whatever stuff they're using to try and look at the matchups, Patrick Wisdom just hasn't been something they've chosen. This is made more difficult when you don't want to play Christopher Morel at third base and you're committed to Morel and he gets some of your DH at-bats and stuff like that. And then Michael Bush has been good. Michael Bush has been good and deserves to play against most matchups. But I have been disappointed in the way that both Wisdom and Bodie have been used since they've been up here. It often has felt like the Cubs are just kind of trotting out people and seeing what they get with some of the basics. I've also been disappointed that Miles Mastroboni and Nick Madrigal were both on this roster at the same time for a while. Like the bottom of the roster, I thought there'd be a lot more kids. And I know the PCA is up here and he's playing, but didn't you think by now that we would have seen either Owen Casey or Matt Shaw, who's all the way down to AA, or maybe Brennan Davis we would have seen if he stayed healthy? When Canario's been here, he hasn't been used. And so, yeah, there's been a I agree with concerns about the bottom of the roster usage on this team. And yes, we all know that the top of the roster and the guys that you're paying needed to produce, and that's why it hasn't worked. But your questions about the bottom of the roster are thoroughly fair. Let's see if we can find another beekeeper. Joe in St. Charles, are you a beekeeper by any chance? Oh, yeah. That was hold music from Joe? That's right. All right, bring it down a little. Where is that? Why does Joe have hold music? Is he calling from work? Bring it back up, man. Come on. Oh, yeah. Sweet.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Thanks, Joe. We'll pop him on hold. And Joe, I think, has missed his opportunity. That's too bad. Poor guy. This is Chuck in Glenview on the score. Hello, Chuck. You're on Hit and Run.
As a old geezer who witnessed the Don Gutteridge 1970 White Sox, my heart is broken. And my heart is broken because in April, there are two things I wish would be over. The presidential election and the White Sox season. I knew this was over when that horrific week in August when oddly enough, the Mariners were in town and the Sox got clobbered and Jerry announced we're going to get rid of Hahn and Williams. And then the next day, Tony La Russa, a guy I used to admire till he decided in his in his dotage, he could manage the White Sox, and mm-hmm. the owner in his dotage thought he could do it.
Yeah,
was at the cell without his hair colored, interviewing both Chris Getz mm-hmm. and Pedro Grifol. I knew it was over. I mean, if Tony La Russa had any baseball sense, Lourie Garcia would be the veteran on this team pulling things together.
Yeah.
But Garcia is sitting on the sidelines making more money than Ohtani because of the structured salary on Ohtani.
Hmm.
I'm horrified by this. I mean, in Gutteridge's time, we had Bill Veeck, John Allen. The Sox were bankrupt almost. They're not bankrupt now. They just got stupid rich people running. You don't have a Bill Veeck coming in who's going to hire Harry Carey as a baseball announcer.
Uh-huh.
And said they fire Benintendi, who was net firing, but let him go, who was a White Sox fan and loved the team. We're not going to get a general manager like Roland Heeman. We're not going to get a manager like Chuck Tanner. And there's no Dick Allen out there.
Well, you got to dream of a baseball guy like Roland Heeman. You got to dream of finding that guy. That's your best ticket to fixing stuff, is to go outside the organization and find a brilliant young baseball mind and then hand him the keys and back away. They didn't do that. They didn't bother to interview anybody last year. The top baseball job is open, and they gave it to the farm director because Jerry wanted continuity. How's that going? He thought it'd be the easiest way is the guy who's here and who knows it is so freaking lazy, insane, drives me crazy. That's the worst. Hey, you got to go outside the org and try to find Roland Heeman. Everything else I know is a fun historical comp, but I mean, go find Dave Dombrowski. Oh, yeah, I guess he was in-house before he got gone. So, no, Heeman is a better call. Unbelievable. All right, one last phone call. Let's go to Bob in Munster. Bob, you're on Hit and Run on the Score.
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, man.
I listen to you every Sunday. I don't know what spawned me to call, but I guess I've been so tired of hearing about, as far as the Cubs are concerned, you know, closing here and defense there. It's a big problem with the team, and I understand it. But to me personally, all year long, all I kept thinking about, and I don't know where it came from, but well, I know where it came from, but he's watching the Cubs, is Brad Pitt in Moneyball. And you know, the conversation he had, you know, everybody's telling him about how great this hitter is, how great this hitter is, how great this hitter is. And he simply replies, well, if he's such a good hitter, why doesn't he hit? We're paying all this money to these guys to produce, and they're not producing. I mean, I personally feel that we've blown more games by lack of production in key moments throughout this season than we have in blown saves or some boneheaded errors in the field. And I just don't know how you get around that. I mean, you know, I don't have an answer to it, but to me, that's our biggest problem.
Absolutely, it is. The offense failing has been the biggest problem. The offense not failing would have given you more of a cushion in the bullpen. And I mean, the starting pitching has been great. And as bad as the defense has been every once in a while, or running into outs on the bases, the offense failing would have covered up a lot of that. That said, everything was all happening at the same time, and it was bad. But remember, this Cubs bullpen has found it. Give Council credit. That's the number one bullpen in baseball since the 1st of June. Number one! And again, give the manager credit for finding those guys and figuring out the roles and finding a way to do it. It's just that the offense being broken and the guys that you're paying big money to, like Dansby Swanson, not producing, the catcher position being empty, Hap not producing early on, Bellinger having a step backwards year and being as injured as he has been. That stuff has been the killer, and not having a superstar to help carry you. when everything else is falling. All right, we may have time for another call or two before the top of the hour, but when we come back, we will do team of the moment. Who is the team of the moment around baseball? It's not the White Sox, who have lost 13 in a row. I do love that suggestion from a texter, though. I mean, come on! 13 in a row, that's impressive.
I thought about texting you about it last night.
Yeah, no, we'll look for better. We'll look for better on the flip side. Lots more hit and run to come. Almost another hour. Keep it here on the score.
Hit and run Sunday mornings, 9 a.m. to noon on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
Here's the 1-0. Abrams swings, lines it into right field. Johnson coming on. He's got it, and the ballgame is over. Dylan Cease says no hit. The Washington Nationals. On a rainy Thursday in D.C., the Padres will celebrate. They have mobbed Cease on the infield, and the Pods sweep the Nats with a 3-0 victory. Cease came close time and time and time again, and today he gets it done.
It was the team of the moment, offering entertainment. The team of the moment, they caught our eyes.
The team of the moment is the San Diego Padres, who are playing very, very, very good baseball. Over the last 30 days, they are pitching with the fourth best team ERA in baseball. Over the last 30 days, they are hitting with the fourth best batting average in baseball. You know what they're doing? They're winning games on the road. What if I told you? What if I told you that in the last 15 games on the road, the San Diego Padres are 12-3. 12-3 on the road.
That's ridiculous.
They are 7-1 on this current road trip, which includes a series win in Cleveland, a sweep of the Nationals, and now having won the first two against the Baltimore Orioles. The Padres have won 7 in a row overall, 8 of their last 10, and are getting incredible performances across the board. Dylan Cease with the no-hitter, as you heard right there. Michael King flirted with a no-hitter last weekend in Cleveland. Offensively, you know some of the guys that have been carrying them and some of the bigger names. And then there's one of my favorite players, the 31-year-old first-time All-Star, Jurickson Profar, who hit two on Friday, two homers, and they were both big. Here's the first.
Here he goes again, and a fly ball hit to right field. Struck pretty well. Santander going back at the wall and is gone. Two-run home run for Jurickson Profar. Ties the score 2-2. Takes it out to right at Camden Yards.
Last two times up for Profar, he's thrown him the changeup, got him to fly out. This one stays on it. Oh, it's got that sound to the right center field gap. That's huge. Right back in this one.
So that tied it. Then later on, Profar came up with a chance to give them the lead.
1-1 pitch in the air to center field, sending Mullins back onto the track, and the wall, it's gone! Profar, the second home run of the night. Two-run shot. Puts the Padres on top 6-4. Jurickson Profar.
Oh, you talk about clutch. You talk about turning around a fastball. That one was belt buckle high. Straightaway center field. He just continues to make us say, wow.
He's awesome. And one of only four active players who homered as a teenager in MLB. Him, Bryce Trout, Juan Soto, Bryce Harper, Mike Trout.
I like that Bryce Trout, though.
Yeah, Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, Juan Soto, and Jurickson Profar are the four active players.
That's so cool.
Who homered as teenagers. The Padres absolutely rolling, pitching great, hitting just enough, making plenty of contact, and their fans must be happy. Must be nice. Texture says, is this a Sporting News Radio throwback, team of the moment? Hot damn. That is somebody who used to listen to me at Sporting News. You're exactly right. I've recorded myself singing those Asia vocals in my bedroom while living in Los Angeles in 2007, maybe 2008. Works better as a baseball bit. And no, I did not frame an Asia poster. I did not do that myself. Another texter, Speaks, did you get a chance to look up how many pitchers this year have been pulled, even though they have a no-hitter going? This came up the other day on Parkinson Spiegel, and Shane Reardon did the research, noted baseball researcher Shane Reardon, that since 1956, it was, 33 pitchers have been pulled after seven innings with a no-hitter going. And in the last 4 years, it has been 16 of them. So more than half, I guess just less than half, but 16 of the 33 that have ever, since 1956, been pulled after seven no-hit innings have happened over the last 4 years. So yes, no-hitters are going to be much more rare because more people are getting pulled with a chance to do it because of pitch counts and because of wear and tear on the arm and those concerns. So yeah, it is much more common. Another texter, Speaks, how did the Tributosaurus shows go this Thursday and Friday? Thank you very much. Yeah, we became the Grateful Dead at Martyrs. They were awesome. I'm not going to lie. They were freaking awesome, and I had just incredible musical joy. I, people, am among the luckiest human beings in the world. I get to play music and talk sports for a living. Let me knock on some wood, thank the lucky stars, kiss it up to Jesus, whatever I got to do. Anybody and everybody. Thank you. Let's keep it rolling.
35. Covered all the bases.
Yeah, right. Cover. I just want to cover everything. Thank, praise. No. I'll start short of that one. Stop short of that one right now. Thank you to all the callers and the listeners. Guess what? Stick around. We got 35 more bonus minutes of Hit and Run. If you are on hold, we will get to you. But there's other stuff I want to get to before we get out of here, including some big picture conversation about offense and baseball, including a great idea from a listener, Mike in LaGrange Park. He gave me an unbelievable idea. So we'll get to that. And I will explain and expound on the Cubs making a buy yesterday and a trade with Toronto. That's all coming in the next 35 minutes here on Hit and Run on the Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.